Welcome to the ATL Podcast Network.
I'm Anissa.
And I'm Ellen.
And this is Raw. For those of you who are not Rawyers, that's our tribe.
We get real, we get raw.
Yeah, yeah. Our thing is like no filter ever, unless it's Snapchat.
We're one take whores.
Yeah. And I'm wondering about the one take with the podcast. Boy, that'd be really interesting.
I love that. Listen, it's one take always, yeah, baby. One take always.
It is. You always know. You never know what you're going to get, but you can always trust that what you get is going to be real.
That's it. That's it in a nutshell right there. We're done. Drop the mic.
Hi there. I'm Anissa.
Hey, Mama. This is Ellen.
And this is
Anissa and Ellen Raw.
Woo, woo. I don't even know where that came from. I said that like 10 times today in classes, and I kept saying it. And as I was saying it, I kept thinking to myself, quit saying that. Why are you doing that? That is like not a you thing.
It is not a you thing.
I know. I messed up.
It's not even a you. It's not even a me thing. Though, you know, Marla in class.
Yes.
She does that old school. Ooh,
I know. I love it.
I love it too.
She's got so much great energy.
How are we doing? Are we good?
Yes. So good.
Yes. I am too. I don't know why my throat is kind of funky. I have allergies, but
you
it's
need
actually
some
been
water?
A little. No, I'm good.
All right.
Thank you. Though. She's like pointing at her little cup.
It has lemon in it.
Oh, that's good. We introduced ourselves a little bit in the first podcast.
Right.
But we really haven't talked. And then if you've listened to all the podcasts since then, you've learned a little bit about us over the course, you know, our personalities and stuff. But we're going to actually give you a little bit more background about us.
We're going to dive in a little bit to our histories. And
just so you get to know each of us a little bit better. So we'll open up. We'll put ourselves out there. We'll invite you into who we are.
And I think too, because we have a platform where we allow other women to come and tell their stories, that at some point we have to tell our stories.
Yes.
And so part of this evening's podcast is to tell some, we may not get through all, but kind of some of our stories.
Right.
And, you know, some of it is the good, bad, and definitely some freaking ugly.
Ugly. Mm-hmm. Well, I'll start out by just saying that, Anissa's childhood and background is completely different than mine.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, like literally
night and day,
you know, one coast, another coast. So I'll start out with me just so that you all, and it's so funny because we had Christina actually posted in the group, hey, tell us where you've lived or where you live now. And it was interesting. I don't know why I was a little shocked that a lot of people didn't know where I've lived, because I feel like I tell everybody, but
you're fucking born in France.
I know. So
I was like, what? And you answered we.
I did.
And I don't mean we, yo.
So I was born. Okay. For first of all, my father is a retired college professor. My mother is a nurse. And no, they did not meet in the military. Everybody thinks that. He actually worked for the Boy Scouts of America. I think they were set up on a blind date and they got together. She was over here in the States doing a residency for nursing back when you had to do a residency. You couldn't like just go to a 2-year JUCO college and get and become a nurse. It was very important to my parents to travel. They traveled. My mother's from the Philippines. My dad is from Arkansas.
Does your mom have an accent?
She does. She has a very... this is a total
Can you
tangent.
Imitate it?
Elena? You know...
okay.
Are we going? Yeah, she's very... There's a comedian out there called Joe Coy. If you watch it, he mimics his mother. That's exactly what my mother... What all little Filipino ladies sound like. So you have to check
all
him
right.
out. He's so funny. But, so it was very important for them to like they traveled a lot. So I was born in Paris, France, because my father was, going to the University of Spain to get one of his master's degrees. And my mother probably wasn't supposed to be there. She was very pregnant and they just decided to do a little touristy thing in Paris. And my father is so smart. But sometimes he lacks a little common sense. So, you know, on the way to the hospital, they decided to look at the Eiffel Tower. Could have totally been born underneath the Eiffel Tower. But I was born in the American hospital in France. Godparents are from Spain, was baptized in Santander, Spain. So we've lived in the Philippines. I've lived in so many states in the U.S. My dad's gone to, you know, he's a lifelong learner. So everything higher education is all his jam, you know. So we've lived in so many states. I've got two sisters and two brothers. I'm the oldest. Jennifer's next in line. We're like stair steps. So there for a little while, there was not one moment my mother was not pregnant.
So there's, you know, three girls and two boys.
No, there's two boys and two girls.
Oh, there's four kids.
Yeah,
okay.
So there's Jen, Adelpha, who we've talked about in a previous podcast. V, we call him V. His name is Vicente, but we call him V. And then Jonathan, who's the baby who just got his PhD in biochemistry.
Wow.
We have two Dr. Hills in my family, my father and the youngest, dorks. Okay. But we love, you know, he was born when I was 14, so he's almost like my child.
Okay.
But, I mean, we've lived so many different places. My parents are very adamant about education, reading, extremely open-minded, extremely, we're a very close family, extremely affectionate, very open with each other. You know, we share everything together. We help each other. There's never been there's never been any humongous drama in my family. We don't have alcoholics. We don't have drug addicts type things. My sister Jen, and I'm going to be very limited in what I say because I don't want to, for her privacy, she suffered from depression in the past. So there have been some moments with her, in trying to keep her healthy and her struggle. And she's very willing to talk about it. But I want to allow her to talk about it at her own pace. Her main goal is to try to help people who may be struggling. And so I'm going to try to ease her into maybe calling in or at least blogging for us a little bit. She wants to. I think she's just, you know, she's a little terrified of the whole putting herself out there because the struggle has been very tough for her. And we've had, you know, there have been some minor issues in our family, but for the most part, we're extremely close. We text and talk all the time. You know, we love and kiss each other and say, I love you constantly. We don't leave each other without saying, I love you. You know, we took family vacations every year until I probably got married. You know, I mean, there's some summers I'm like, can I just stay home and just hang out with my friends and spend the night? You know, I'll just stay over at so-and-so's friend's house. I don't want to go in the car, in the van across the country, you know, to New Mexico. But I look back on those moments now and I'm so thankful for them. And I even miss them a lot, you know, when my parents were dragging us all over the place. And all I wanted to do was just be with my family.
So I'm curious, because you did move so much, what type of, like, was there ever this angst about, oh, we're moving again? I just made these friends and now I'm going to have to make friends all over again. Like, did you have any of those?
No, I think one of the reasons why I am so extroverted and why the whole transition to being a fitness instructor was very easy for me is because I made friends very easily. I was we were the new kids, you know? I mean, I can remember moving from the Midwest down to North Carolina and people, classmates making fun of my accent or the way I said things. You know, I didn't say Coca-Cola, I said pop. And, you know, instead of saying, hey, they would say, can I go get water? I would say, can I go get a drink? And I put the NGs on the ends of my words, drinking, you know, thinking instead of thinking and drinking. But I was always the new, but as I got older, I kind of liked that, you know, I never felt like I was, I never felt like, oh my gosh, I don't want to be the new person. I don't want people staring at me and not knowing. I never felt that. I made friends really, really easily. One of the great things about my parents was they were very, they're very inclusive. So we weren't allowed for the longest time to have branded clothing. You know, we lived in poverty stricken. We lived in third world countries where you couldn't, you know, if you had enough money to buy a tube of lipstick, you were lucky. So to come back to the States and be worried about wearing Izod shirts and buying your clothes from, you know, expensive clothing and stuff, my parents weren't having it. It's like, you know, we don't want you in that. So we were made fun of sometimes, you know, we didn't have the latest clothing stuff, but I didn't really give a shit. It didn't bother me. I was like, you know what? I've lived in countries where kids don't have that are wandering the streets don't have clothing. Okay. At all. Naked. So for you to like make fun of me because I'm not wearing an Izod, you know, some polo shirt with an alligator on it. I don't, you know, you can go fuck yourself. Like, seriously.
Right.
You know, so that I'm very grateful to them for that. We were never now my brothers and sisters may have, but me personally, I was not. What about you? I know she's sitting here. She's been staring at me. It's interesting. She's been staring at me with a very poignant look, like very. And I know why.
Yeah.
So.
So I did not. First of all, the first thing that I want to say is before I kind of talk about my story, I want to come at it from a perspective that I truly feel that my parents did the best they could. Mm-hmm. So I want to start by saying that I have done the work already to be at the place that I'm at. So mm-hmm. when I speak about some of the things that are part of my life experience, I don't have the same type of anger or things about them. I still have residual feelings about it, but I don't have those same things. Mm-hmm. So I just always kind of, I don't know why I lead with that. I just do. So I grew up, I was a Navy brat initially. Mm-hmm. I have a brother, and then I have two stepbrothers. Though I don't really have very much contact with them. I don't really speak to my brother at all. Occasionally I speak to my stepbrothers. But my father is an alcoholic. And he was not a very nice alcoholic. Mm-hmm. He had a horrible temper. It was rough.
Mm-hmm. I know, because I know the story. We've talked about it.
It was rough. My very first memory from childhood is, I don't know exactly how old I was, but I know that my brother, who's 2 years younger than me, was in a high chair. So I do know that much. So I'm not sure how old I was. But I can remember there being an argument, and the argument had something to do with the fact that dinner was burnt. I don't obviously know what it was, but I can remember 100% my mom's body flying across the kitchen because my dad had hit her, and her sliding on her ass and hitting her head on the table.
Mm-hmm.
And that's my first memory.
Mm-hmm.
That's my earliest memory. And, she kind of scooped me and my brother up, and I remember leaving in the car. Of course we went back or whatever. So there are, because of those very early experiences, I lived most of my life in a very removed perspective.
Mm-hmm.
So the way that I see it is, this was just something recently that I kind of identified. I literally lived most of my life as if I was in the backseat of a car.
Mm-hmm.
There, I am removed from what is occurring in front of me. And that's what happens when you experience abuse, is mm-hmm. you do not, even though, now I have to say, I was never physically struck. I mean, I'm sure I got spankings and stuff when mm-hmm. I was growing up. I probably even got the belt. I'm sure I did. But I was never hit or things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I witnessed that.
Mm-hmm.
on a couple of occasions, and I witnessed arguments that were scary as shit, you know, dishes flying. And he and my mom broke up when I was 8. But then even in his second marriage, there was still some abuse and definitely just ugliness. You know, I was told, that I was worthless several times. I can remember helping my brothers with, some stuff and being finished and being yelled at and, things thrown, sharp things, sharp objects past my head and just things that would, that you just don't feel safe. We, after the divorce, I did live with my mom for, a long time, and I would go to visit my dad. You know, he lived at that time, we still lived in California, but they lived a plane ride's distance away. So I would have to take the plane, and I would get physically sick when I knew I was going to have to go visit my dad. And I would be physically sick when I got home. Of course, I didn't know why. I just knew that my stomach would hurt really bad and things like that. When I was in eighth grade, I moved to live with my dad. My mom is amazeballs, but she, you know, was struggling with single parenthood, and she was, you know, it was the '70s and people party and people do these kinds of things. And it was just not a really great environment.
Healthy.
Correct. It wasn't. And probably not super safe at that time. I didn't really know. But so I went to live with my dad. That was in eighth grade, and I was so depressed. So depressed. I can remember, and the reason why is because of all the anxiety. When you swallow the anxiety, it turns into that. I can remember not really being a cutter, but some of that to try to let some of the emotion out. I also have in my history sexual abuse as well. And so, there's lots of issues with that too. That was not, that was other areas of family members and things. So it wasn't, in my actual house, but still that's another little piece to my puzzle. And I don't say these things. So here's the, one of the reasons that it's hard for me to talk about my story is because I don't want to be viewed as a victim, because I don't feel that way about myself. And I don't feel that any of these life experiences define who I am, because like we spoke about with the spirituality, I am so much more than anything that this form endured. Now, it doesn't mean that it doesn't leave a mark on you that you have to work through. I did have to work through those things, and I did go through therapy, and I did have all of the clinical, psychological side effects of having experienced these things in my life. So I was crazy promiscuous because that is where you go for your source of external validation. These are all textbook things that you see. I didn't know that at the time when I'm, you know, having these kinds of behaviors. I didn't know that it was because of what I had experienced. Why would I know that? But these are all things that, you know, were just part of my, my experience growing up in high school. You know, my dad would travel for work sometimes, and those were some of the best times. And yet underneath it all you want is for your father to love you and say he's proud of you. Like that's all you want. It doesn't matter what a shit he is. It doesn't matter. You still want that.
You crave it.
Oh my gosh. And I think even to today, that I think that there still is a piece of me that still wants that validation. I'll never get it. And I understand that. It's not as if my dad and I have had all, like bad experiences. I'm not saying that. He had this amazing brown, it was probably was like the ugliest thing on the planet. But to me, he had this amazing brown recliner chair when I was little that I loved with all my heart. And he was a Navy man, so I would sometimes wear his Navy hat or whatever, and we would sit there, me and my brother would sit in that chair, or, and I just loved his chair. And I can remember my dad was a huge Star Trek, like back in the Captain Kirk days, And there would be times if I woke up at night and he was watching that, and I would be able to sit with him and we would watch Star Trek. And I still love Star Trek to these to this day because of that. So there were all there were some tender moments too. Mm-hmm. My dad was just sick.
Yes, he was.
And very angry. Mm-hmm. And I will say this, as damaging and awful as my experience was, his experience in his childhood was 1,000 times worse.
Worse.
1,000 times worse. And so I have such compassion for him because I understand that he was reacting from a place of so much pain.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So much pain. And I can tell you that he at least never put his hands on me. Mm-hmm. Right? So I think that the meditation helps with that as well. It strips away some of the anger. A lot of my healing from some of the life experiences that I've had has not been because of therapy. I did do some therapy to work through some of my sexual issues. I did get some therapy about, around those things because I needed it. I was doing, I had some behaviors and some tendencies that were very damaging to not just myself, but others. And so I had to get some help with that. But beyond that, the meditation has just allowed some of that pain and frustration and maybe even anger and victim mentality to just drop away.
Because you're not, I mean, you know, if you had not told me that story about your history, I would never have guessed that that's, that you, that, that it was as bad as it was. You're a very loving, caring, giving person. You're a very loving, caring, giving mother. And I mean, there isn't one week that doesn't go by where you don't tell me something about the kids. And I mean, when we were in Florida, Jack was so excited. Like we're in the middle of, we're in this restaurant and we're in the middle of doing some planning for Raw. And Jack, her youngest son, calls her. He's so excited. He wants to tell her about some great, awesome thing.
Grades. That, yeah, it was something with his
for
grades.
School.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And just the
girl, my oldest, who's in grad school, will call me to tell her her grades.
Yes.
So that never goes away.
No. Right. And I mean, you
but
know,
I think
you,
that doesn't go away because.
Well, but it, you know, it, you I, know we alluded
our relationship.
To, we talked about, yeah, we talked about this when Marita did the podcast, you know, you, when you grow up in an environment like that, it can go one of two ways. It can, you can perpetuate the cycle of damaging behavior, unhealthy environment, or you can do your best to not continue it, but not to give your children or your loved ones or whoever's in your life the same thing. And you, both of you, you and Marita, were very, you know, focused in making sure that you did the,
for
you
our
know,
children, yeah.
Not only that, but for yourselves.
Yeah.
And, you know, we, when Anissa and I were talking about what we were going to talk about today on the podcast, you know, we wanted to open up ourselves a little bit, but our, it's very difficult to describe to you how the way Anissa and I are together when we're very opposite in a lot of things. There's, and unless you see us in person, together, when we team teach together,
But I even think they're starting to get a feel for it on the podcast.
I think
though.
So too. I think they can see it, but if you're like in our presence, it's, her, the things that she's gone through, you know, and we talked about this in one of the earlier podcasts, you know, and then there were times when, especially when Marita was here, where I feel so, inexperienced and naive because I didn't ever, I never went through some of these things. I can't tell you, you're the only, you know, you're literally one of the only people that I have in my life that has, and it's not that I choose people who aren't damaged or who haven't gone through that. Not at all. It just worked out that way. And so
Well, I think it's that prolific. First of all, let me say that I think that, you know, if they say that 3 out of 4 people experience some type of abuse, or 1 out of 4 girls, well, actually, I don't even think it's girls, are sexually abused, chances are you're going to meet some people.
Right. Yeah. And so, you know, we bring certain things to each other's lives and to our friendship. And, if you listen to us, it's just so hard to describe, but if you listen to us, you can, and we say it all the time, you know, Anissa's very metaphysical. She's very spiritual. She's very, you know, even when you listen to the way she talks on the podcast versus the way that I talk on the podcast and how I communicate my thoughts, we're very different. And it has a lot to do with, you know, how she turned her life and to bring it to where it is. And then, of course, I'm coming from, you know, my parents were very, be who you are, talk the way you want to talk. There's never been a moment where I've had to, literally, I said it in one of the other podcasts, I've never really had to work very hard for anything, like ever. I mean, I'm not saying my parents were super rich and gave me everything. No, I'm not even talking about that. I'm not talking about the materialistic things. I'm talking about growing up in an environment where you get all the love that you are craving, where you get all the validation, where you, even now my dad is so proud. I mean, like, there's not been one moment where we've had a conversation where he hasn't told me, you know. So those kinds of things, I've never had to work hard to get that. I've never not known what it's like to not have that in my life. And I'm so thankful that, I have the self-confidence that I have, and I have to be as authentic as because my parents were very, my environment was very stable and secure and positive and loving. And so when I sit here and I look at you, when you're talking about this and the pain in your face and how you're carefully choosing your words and how you want to express yourself, it just makes me love you so much, you know, like love you and admire you so much more. And I'm not saying that, you know, my friends who are similar to me, I love them too, but you know, it's those trials and tribulations and those things that happen to you that make you, that define, you know, that give you the strength that you have. And you know, truth be told, there are times where I think, you know, gosh, you know, I haven't been through some of this stuff and what the fuck do I know, you know, but at the same time, I'm very grateful for who I am and how I came about it, for lack of a better term of saying it.
But you know what? Sometimes it's so, so nice, Ellen, to have someone hold space for you who hasn't experienced it, because it's just, it's so comforting to not feel like you're mixing your shit with someone else's shit. You know, I mean, everybody's got their shit. I get that. But for instance, I went to a support group for a little while for, people who had experienced, sexual abuse, right, as children. And so I went like the first time, and my therapist had recommended it. So I went, and I went the first time, and that was fine. And then I went another time, and that was okay too. And then I finally said to my therapist, I said, you know, I've talked to some of these women, and disclaimer, I'm not saying that you can't go to a support group.
Right.
I did. No, disclaimer, right? I'm not saying that. I'm just saying here was my experience.
That's your experience.
Right?
Exactly.
Here's my experience. So as I was there and I'm hearing these women talk about their experiences, and some of them had been going for 8 years. Some of them had been going for 10 years. And they were talking about their experiences, and I could see while they were talking about it that they're reliving it. And I kept thinking, you just put the fucking scab on the wound. Would you quit scratching it off? Would you quit scratching? That's the healing. Stop opening the wound over and over again. And I remember discussing it with my therapist, and I said, I don't think I want to go back. And he said, well, why? And I said, because I don't want to talk about the problem anymore. I want to explore the solution. Mm-hmm. I don't want to just sit with, I understand that they need to get off their chest, but they've been doing this for 8 and 10 years. I don't want to do that for even 6 months.
I have a friend.
Tell me what to, and I would say every time I saw him, give me homework. What can I do? Give me homework. Mm-hmm. And I would read books and he would give me other energy things to do. He would give me, like, I was having another really tough bout with depression during the time I was seeing him. And I actually had gotten, not from him because he didn't prescribe, but I was on a low dose of an antidepressant. Mm-hmm. And I said, you know, how do I know if I'm going to be on the antidepressant for forever? And he says, well, for right now, when you are feeling depressed, give yourself 5 minutes, set a timer and fully feel it. Explore mm-hmm. it. I was not, I'm not going to say I've never had suicidal thoughts. I have, but I'm not mm-hmm. saying that I was suicidal, but, he said, set the timer for 5 minutes, fully feel it, fully be depressed. And then I don't care what it takes you, get up and do something. Mm-hmm. If you need to call a friend, go make your bed. Even if your bed is made, unmake it and make it a bed mm-hmm. again. Do something, allow yourself the 5 minutes. And then even if you feel like shit the rest of the day, you're going to be active for the rest of the day. Mm-hmm. And that's what I did, right? That's mm-hmm. what he told me to do. So that's everything he told me to do. I did it. And I'm not going to say that I felt great. But eventually I got off of the medication. I'm like, well, how do I know? He says, if you go back to feeling like mm-hmm. you can't function, then you go back on the medication. Mm-hmm. And I didn't feel like that. Of course, I also self-medicated with a good amounts of alcohol during that period of my life as well.
Yes.
But which that's a whole nother podcast. I will talk about my issues with alcohol. But you know, that whole support group thing was super helpful to tell the story. But at some point for me, there had to be some growth past there. I didn't want to say stuck. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to continue to feel like every choice I was making was coming from that little girl who'd been abused instead of making the choices as an adult. I wasn't living my life as an adult. All of the decisions I was making and boy, I tell you, you may look at me and think, oh, I admire you. Let me tell you, it's fucking fucked up to be married to me when I'm in that kind of space. Well, it's awful. Yeah. So for me to be able to learn to get out of that little girl's, how she viewed the world and how she was in her body, and start to strip that away, that's why I can sit where mm-hmm. I am today. Because she knows it's safe to be out.
Right.
She knows it's safe to come out.
I have a good friend who was abused, sexually abused, and there's so many issues there, but he would go to therapy and then he'd stop. He'd go back to therapy and he'd stop. He knows he has to go to therapy. And the one thing that he said was he could not go into a group and sit there and talk about his issues and talk about the things that had happened to him in his life with other people who were talking about similar things and not leave there and let the negativity mm-hmm. and the depression of it just completely engulf the rest of his life. Like, it would take him 2 and 3 and 4 days, almost a week after a therapy session. He's like going 2 times a week where he would just stop. And I would get frustrated because I would say, you're not giving yourself enough time to work this out. But I totally get what he's saying when you're sitting there, you know, session after session, and you're just talking about heavy, negative, reliving things that maybe you've never told anybody in your life until that moment. Mm-hmm. And then you go home and you have to get up and go to work the next day, or you have to take your children to soccer practice or whatever. And it weighs so heavy. And especially if you haven't talked about it before to anybody, and now you're
unleashed it.
Yeah, unleashed it. And it's like you said, you're just like reliving mm-hmm. that time, and it just weighs so heavy on you. So I totally get it. You know, I I like to hear Anissa story. We talk about each other's lives. We talk about, you know, I ask her a lot of questions about her family, about what happened with her brother and things. And I don't ask her those things because I am nosy and, you know, want her to divulge her innermost secrets about whatever. I ask her about those things because I care about her and I want to know about her and I want to know about her life. But I also think that it's like she said, and this is something that I've come to learn that, you know, I can give her a different perspective than maybe somebody who's gone through similar things. And it's the same thing. You know, I can talk to her about things in my life and she can give me a totally different perspective of, you know, especially if I have an issue with something, she gives me a totally different perspective about things. You know, she reminds me that, she doesn't say, oh my gosh, you're so ridiculous. That's so minuscule in the grand scheme of life. Be grateful. She never says things like that to me, but she, but the way she approaches how she talks to me about things. And when I do have an issue and I talk to her, you know, cause there's never been a moment where I sit there and go, oh my gosh, I can't, let's just take this whole menopause thing that I've been talking about. I never go to somebody and say, oh, I've got, woe is me, with the thought in my mind that they're going to totally dismiss. You know, I open myself up to people, and you know what, if you dismiss me, that's fine. If you think it's not important enough in the grand scheme of things, you know, compared to having cancer or whatever, but how you deal with things and how you reach out to people for help, no matter what it is, that's the whole point of the group. It doesn't matter how small it is. It doesn't matter what your background is. It doesn't matter. We're all in this together. We all can give perspectives on certain things. And so somebody the other day told me, oh my gosh, you know, the great thing about you and Anissa is that she's so totally different than you. And you're so totally different. And I don't think that at all. I think that there are differences, but I think there's so many things that
we're so similar.
Yeah. In things that, this is just one facet of our friendship that's completely different, mm-hmm. but where it's brought us together today and where we are now is what makes us fucking fabulous.
It's so magical. And, I mean, it's raw.
It is raw.
And it comes from a place that's universal. Mm-hmm. And,
I think about it this way, and maybe I'm wrong, and maybe people will make fun of me, and maybe people think I'm ridiculous, but like Anissa can literally sit here and speak her truth and talk to people who've gone through similar things and speak from the truth of knowing what domestic violence is, knowing what it's like to live in a very unhealthy, unstable environment, not just when she was young, but even up to when she was married. And I can come from this perspective of being authentic and real and say, hey, I lived in a stable, very healthy environment. So we bring this whole, you know, it's not like I'm sitting here trying to tell you who, you know, who's been through hell and say, oh my gosh, you know, well, we have such different backgrounds and we have touched on so many different aspects of life that we can legitimately together talk to everybody.
We can.
And say, listen, I feel your pain. You know, I
see
know,
you.
Yeah, I see you. I know. So I may not know what it's like to witness somebody being physically abused for years, you know, but I can empathize with it and I can speak to, you know, that certain aspect of loving you for who you are and loving you for your journey, loving you for your, whatever it is. And Anissa can do the same thing, mm-hmm. you know, but collectively together as a pair, as a unit, we can we can speak to everybody.
And we do.
We do, don't we?
And we will.
We will.
And we will. Y'all have no idea. There, I have some big shifts coming in my life that are so fabulous, which we will talk about soon on the next podcast. But big things will happen because I think when you bring such magic to something, that's the only thing that can happen. So it's
I agree.
Good. So it you is. Can hear Anissa and Ellen on multiple platforms.
Brian keeps showing us his damn timer on his phone.
Yes.
Brian's going on vacation tomorrow with his woman and their friends.
With the queen, baby.
I know. Like to lay out in the sun.
I know.
Well, we'll just be here. I didn't get an invite, did you?
No, but we're team teaching this weekend, so I'm happy now.
We got to bring Vanessa and Brian to take a class. Okay, so I'm sorry I interrupted. Say that again.
Oh, no, you go. You can.
Okay. Okay, so you can hear us on multiple platforms.
Yeah, I did that part. Okay. Gee whiz.
Visit atlpn.com, AtlantaPodcastNetwork.com. You can check out Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, SoundCloud, and Spotify.
Yep.
You can also catch these podcasts on our website, which is AnissaEllenRaw.com. And then the IG pages, Atlanta Podcast Network, ATL Podcast Network, Ellen Nickel.
Anissa Amison.
Yes. We're all over the place, yo.
Yep. And Brian, I just want to say a huge, huge thank you to you. You have blessed my life immeasurably for allowing me the space to be able to have this platform. Mm-hmm. And so I just,
both of us,
I bless your endeavors wholeheartedly because boy, they help me too. Right.
He's amazing.
Selfishness. And yes. Thank you so much, Brian.
We love Brian.
Yes.
And I love you.
Oh, girl. I love you too.
Peace out.